Welcome back, everybody, to the Tectonic Show, Hip Hop Spent Hour on the Radio. Today, got Matthew McConaughey, guest appearance on the show. I'm going to get to that here in 5 seconds. Make sure to go on Google, go on outthegutter.com and purchase one of my 1,000 CDs, my physical copy for my greatest hits, because before they're gone, they're very, very limited edition and they're super, super rare. So make sure to get it and go on outthegutter.com and go right on the homepage of it. MJ wants you to do it too. Right? Yep, you agreed. All right, I'm going to get right to this, the interview. Matthew McConaughey.
So look, I want to start kind of at the end in the sense of you had a little experience on an airplane recently.
Yeah.
What flashes through your mind when the thing you're taking for granted, which is getting safely from point A to point B, suddenly changes?
First thing, let me get an eye line on the flight attendants.
Yeah.
Because I know they're trained to look calm and
sure
together. And I've hit turbulence before where I'm like, whoa. But then you look at the flight attendant and like, and you kind of measure. And you're looking for their indirect wink, like it's okay or oh
yeah.
Shit, right?
Yes.
Well, there was no, there was no wink. Everyone was like, and the flight attendants were somewhere, you know, down, getting themselves back up together and were really scared. You saw the fear in their eyes. I immediately, without thinking about it, put a hand out to my wife, Camilla, and held her. We held each other here, my left arm, her right. You kind of hold your breath. Some people were laughing. And it was almost a nervous sort of shock laughter,
right,
is what I understood afterwards. And when it happened, there was no seatbelt warning prequel. There was no warning before it happened.
Mm.
I'm lucky I had the, Camilla and I both had our dinner tray tables over our waist. And when we went up, that was the hinge that held my feet went up and my torso went up. And that was the hinge that held me at my waist. And then I remember looking up and seeing there was a glass of red wine just floating in this beautiful shape in the air, standing still. And I was in inception for a second. All these plates and everything just slowed down to, you know, about 300 frames a second. And all of a sudden it just floated 1, 2, 3, 4, wham! And on the slam downs when everything, just gravity came and everything dropped. And it was a lot of, you could hear a lot of steel on steel. A lot of those, they had just gotten the service carts out, which weigh a lot. And,
yeah,
and when those came down behind us, you had heard some, then you started to hear a little bit of some screaming. Again, look at those flight attendants. What's the look on their face? Another, like the third, I guess the third in charge of, if one of the pilots went out, came out, and he was very discombobulated. That's when I knew it was serious. Then it was, oh, geez, our friends tell us all the time that if you can, fly separate as a husband and wife, if you can.
Yes.
And we had that deal.
Yes.
And I was like, you know, maybe we ought to take that. We'll talk about that later. Let's see if there's another one coming. Let's see if there's another hit coming. I didn't start to go down a list of like prayers. It was more deal with the immediate moment. What do I got to? I didn't go like say Hail Marys or anything like that. Like, this is the
sure
end. So now let me, you know, what I say on the way down. It wasn't that. Oh, look, I was fortunate. I had a friend, Matthew O'Hare, riding to the right of me with a pilot, and he had the radar on his iPhone. It was like, yeah, we're just on the left edge of this thing. I don't know why we didn't get further left. We got to get off the berm of this storm. It's right here. And we're still not out away from it. And right about then, bam, another one hit. Now the seatbelts are on, so it's a little more secure. And then, you know, being a beginner, intermediate engineer, my question is there structural damage to this plane? Because that was as big of a jolt by Mother Nature as I've ever felt on a piece of steel flying through the air. And enough where I was like, I don't know what could withstand, at least not being bent, you know, in my mind. And he goes, oh, no, don't worry about that. These planes are tested to such a great strength that there's no structural damage. I was like, okay. And then the dust settles. We see on the radar that we're out away from the storm. Some of that laughter I heard in the back turns to tears and moaning and crying. People start to tend to their wounds, kind of come out of the shock to these people start to measure, how am I really injured? And there were quite a few injuries. And then everything I've just said in the last 3 minutes goes through my mind in about the first 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Because after 20 seconds, I then got pissed off. I then got immediately mad and was cussing and going, man, and I got another pilot to my right with the radar going, we could have just headed off west and taken 10 more minutes and missed it. But we did. And so now I'm like, that was avoidable. Hmm. Why? What the hell? So now I'm pissed off. And around the time I'm getting pissed off, I'm settling back down. There's no more service. Everyone's just trying to clean up broken glass and tend to people. All of a sudden they go, we thought we were going to make it to New York, which was not the ultimate destination, but instead we had to cut back to Washington Dulles. And then you land and there's 7 ambulances on the ground. And it was a lot worse behind us in the middle of the plane. But fear, oh my gosh, complete no control. This could be it. Let me hold the one I love to the left of me. Yes, if this is it, it's been written. I love you. Here we go. I got you. Wait a minute. This is bullshit. That was it. That was about the real time emotions.
Yeah. So there's a moment of acceptance where you're like, I'm just a passenger on this plane. If it goes, it goes.
Yeah. There's a moment of, look, I've said that about planes before and why I'm not nervous flying, why I'm still not nervous. And I've flown since and why I'm not nervous. I'm just like, dude, I know that if the shit does hit the fan, I'm not next in line as the best pilot.
Yeah.
So therefore I'm out of control. Therefore I'm going to relax. Now, if I was a decent pilot, I'd probably be a lot more nervous on planes for thinking at a moment like that, oh, am I up? This is time to put me in, coach. Now I've got a reason to have some nerves. But no, there's a moment when that happened and I'm like, seatbelt, no seatbelt. If this crashes, you don't hear many where you go, well, the ones with the seatbelt survived in the plane crash.
Yeah.
Less injuries in the cabin for sure. But this is one of those like, oh, if this goes down, my mind immediately goes, was this written?
Yes.
Was this written or is this random? And I pretty much go quickly into with that situation. I had a moment of, this was written. This was the narrative of my life. This is it. This is the narrative of everyone in here's life. Could be, if this is what happened, if we go down, okay. And then, within that 30 seconds, I didn't go back and deconstruct 53 years of, oh, did I do this? What would I do different? Oh my God, it wasn't a deathbed deal. Like, what do I regret? And what? No, it was just like, whoa, this could be an abrupt exit. This is completely out of my control. What will happen is going to deem what happens to me and everyone else on this plane.
Yeah.
And we may be exiting this life. That understanding did go through head and body.
It's an interesting metaphor. There's a line in towards the end of Meditations, which Marcus Aurelius is probably writing as he's getting close to death. He goes, look, the curtain's coming down. And he goes, but wait. And he goes, hey, man, this play's only got 3 acts. Like, that's it for you. And there is something about that, I think, where you can go, hey, it was a pretty good script. I had a good part. I played the shit out of my part. If you can't, maybe something different flashes through your mind in one of those moments.
Yeah, I wonder, because it's not a, you know, like we're the circumstance we're talking about, very different than someone fading out.
Yeah, sure.
The last 10 years, or knowing the curtain is being called on their death, and there's a lot of room for deconstructing where you've been and memory to catch up and judgment. And a lot of people find faith in those last years where maybe they didn't have it before. And my circumstance, obviously there's no time for that kind of abrupt realization. There's no time to go back and like do the grade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no time to go. It would have been very arrogant to say, oh, you know what I regret, honey? It would have been like, no, dude, it was still a bit of that, you know, hey, quit praying, get your ass up, well, let's run from the tornado. It was like, what do we do? What can we do? I got you. I'm holding the hand. It wasn't much time to get objective about the situation for me.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. How quickly you land on the ground, you got all your arms and legs, fingers and toes. It's the least bad version of what could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a moment of gratitude, or does the anger prevent the gratitude? Do you feel like a second lease or no?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm sort of parlaying gratitude and I'm still pissed. I'm still going. Not pissed at the inconvenience that our whole trips and plans are thrown off and we had to land. We're going to go figure out where we're going to. Just like, damn it, that was freaking unavoidable. So I start going through stereotypical scenarios that are in my own head about why would someone do that? And I go back and I remember before we took off, the pilot coming on going, sorry, we're leaving 15 minutes late. I'll try and make as much time up as we can get to it. And I'm like, are they running on a protocol? They're running on a time. Did the pilot know it was avoidable and said, no, I'll just skirt the left berm of the, instead of losing 10 more minutes and getting clear away from it. I don't know. You go through these things. I'm just pissed because it was unavoidable. And I'm pissed because my buddy's holding the radar, who's a pilot next to me, going, we're damn close to this thing before it happens. So I'm mad, and then I'm like, look, Camille and I sat there at the end of the night when we got that little room in the motel and put a little food in our belly and took a few deep breaths, called the kids and had a little, didn't say, oh my God, how are y'all, didn't overdo it and exaggerate and get sentimental, but we were like, boy, Mom and I, your mother and I just had an event happened tonight that shook us to the core. We are playing almost, and they're like, we saw that on the news. Y'all were on that. Yeah. And then we went to them, and I think through teaching them and reminding them, let's make, you know, did come through my head? The old, and it's been said a million times, the old, hey, when you say goodbye, make sure you say I love you.
Yes.
That did go through my head. And I remember the next week, one of our children was going to school and he was in a grumpy mood, and we didn't get the hug goodbye and the I love you, and he didn't say the I love you back. And it was some people out there might be going, oh, that's the after school special. Yeah, whatever, it's low hanging fruit. It's great.
Sure.
It really went through my head to go, oh, watch leaving on a bad note if it's just a mood you're in with people that you give a damn about and you love, you know, because you really don't know. And that exit, that last moment will, some people I've heard will, you know, regret that. The ones that live on the side of losing someone where it didn't end up, they regret that last moment was that.
Every time could be the last time.
Yeah. Now, you know, again, not to get sentimental on it, it's just fact. Every time could be the last time. At the same time, I'm not really interested in. You can become hypo.
Sure.
Chondriacal in that, if that's a word. You can become really kind of paranoid and kind of hovering and cocoon yourself and your loved ones for that, and kind of all of a sudden, you know, you don't want to go out. I've seen people do it. You don't want to go out the door in the morning. For fear of this could be the last time.
Sure.
You know, or no, don't go out there. And you see children get sheltered.
Sure.
Not have experiences because they never skin their knee or break, you know, get a bruise or what have you. To go out and figure it out on their own or come home scared, you know.
Yeah.
But it's true. Yeah, every time. It's a risk.
Yeah, especially I think coming out of COVID where you had all this time where you kept your kids very, very close. I know I did. The acceptance of bringing risk back into your life, right? Because every time you get in a plane, every time you get in a car, every time you do anything, there's a risk. And you can't live your life that way. But I do think you have to, because it could happen, it doesn't mean you shouldn't do things, but you probably shouldn't leave any loose ends untied.
Are the risks higher? Because they sure feel like it. Or are we just sort of coming out with virgin wings again, engaging with risk, and it feels brand new and it feels exaggerated again?
I mean, it does feel like... Look, I certainly think a media environment where you can see real-time images of every horrible thing that's happening anywhere in the world exacerbates or perhaps brings to the forefront risks that maybe otherwise you wouldn't be considering. But, you know, there's a war raging in Europe. You know, there's a great power struggle between the U.S. and China. We live in a country flooded with assault rifles. We're just coming out of a pandemic. Life's scary,
stuff,
man.
It shows
scary.
That stuff's on the scoreboard for sure.
Yeah. You can't let that paralyze you, but it should, the reality of those things, I think, or lesson from, you know, what you went through is, don't leave things hanging. Don't leave things undone. Don't put things off to the future.
Right.
Take the opportunities while you have them, because you never know.
Yeah. And, you know, things like that, event, what happens on something, it does sober you up in a way, more sober than you maybe were before. And
sure.
You do, because it becomes directly personal. And
yes.
You look around you and the things you love and care about are in 8K.
Yeah.
Or maybe they were just, you know, they were HD before. I mean, it becomes, mm-hmm. Whoa, it becomes more personal and you do care for it more. It has more meaning. You have more gratitude for it.
I saw this thing. This guy was sitting in his living room and stray bullet comes through the window, buries in a book behind his head. Actually in Tim Ferriss's Tools for Titans, I think, just right behind his head, just sitting there, bullet gets buried, you know, misses him by a couple inches. He's not in a war zone. He's in his frickin' house. And so on the one hand, like you said, you're angry at things that are totally senseless, preventable, didn't need to happen.
Right.
At the same time, I got to think you get up off the couch after that happens and you go, I got a second chance. I was spared. How am I going to use this gift that, you know, maybe somebody was looking out for me or the odds were in my favor or one of my nine lives is still with me. How am I going to spend that? To me, that's the question you take from those great near misses.
Yeah. And how quickly and how long for how long? And how much is that just a New Year's resolution that by February we've forgotten?
Yes. Yeah.
And how much does it go, no, it's opened up a truer, more glorious and beautiful perspective that is that is real, that I'm going to make sure I remember when the lines get fuzzy again, when everything seems like easy street and I've got nothing to defend and it doesn't seem so personal and life's just a song. Yeah.
Right. It does fade quickly. It does fade very quickly. You get the reminder of memento mori, that life is short, that you're not in control, that you're a passenger. Someone could write you out of the play at any moment. But then our sort of natural ego and self-centeredness and comfort, it creeps back in pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you and I've talked about it. I'm working on defining and understanding and believing and trying to communicate that I think that when we do have that sobriety we're talking about, that of what's important in our life and how to take care of it and what are we going to do going forward, that that is actually more self-centered.
Yeah.
That is actually really – now we're talking self-centered. Yes, that's what we're talking about because what you're talking about, we live that way and care for those things that we love that much more. Take those certain risks to maybe become what we're like. We're just a little afraid to do that.
Yeah.
We're ultimately serving ourselves in the future. We've mm-hmm. talked about that, and to let you know, which is a religious experience. That's religion. I mean, right? And ultimately that would be inversely, yeah, from the inside out, the most self-centered thing you could do, the most selfish thing you could do for yourself and others. And I'm really working on, my pastor says I pushed a big rock up a steep hill on this one. I'm really working I believe there's a truth that actually the most selfish, truly selfish, not in the definition, the Webster's we run around with it today,
yeah.
Really the most truly selfish acts and people we can be are actually simultaneously being the most selfless. And then the reciprocity starts and it starts to feed us back and serve ourselves. And again, I don't think you get rid of that ego. I think you actually, the really healthy ego is part and parcel with that service, with those, with that caring for that which we love the most, including ourselves.
Yeah. And you talk about this in the course a lot, basically the virtue of selfishness, and that you can't take care of other people if you're not taking care of yourself. If you don't know what you want, if you don't know what's important to you, if you don't know what has you at your best, you know, you're not going to be what you can be for the world, for other people, you know, for the stranger you bump into on the street.
Yeah. I don't believe we are.
I think, you know, the parable of the talents in the Bible?
No, what is it?
The parable of the talents is basically
came back, yeah. Even one buried, one lost, mm-hmm. damned the one that buried it, damned the brother that buried it.
But the one that does the right thing is the one who turns the money or the gift into more, right? Yeah. To whom much is given, much is expected. And I do think all of us are born with a kind of a unique potential or a capacity, and to not realize that potential or that capacity because you're scared, because you're intimidated, because you're codependent, because you make it about everyone else. I mean, that does deprive the world of things. Like, people who realize their potential employ other people, they inspire other people, they make things that other people enjoy, they invent things, you know, they make art that lasts, that stands the test of time. I think, you know, realizing your potential is both selfish and selfless along the sort of dichotomy that you set up.
Is it? It's also, I think, a part of, if I'm gonna redefine selfish in this mm-hmm. way, and I'm supposing ears are going, okay, that which I do for me, damn be the world, at the expense of my neighbor, I'm going after what I want more of. I start to mm-hmm. now to go, okay, so I can be successful. Maybe we got to get in there and start redefining what that word is. Success. Mm-hmm. What is it? What would we be doing if we're doing all for ourselves? That's part of what my redefinition of selfishness. Okay, what are you doing? Our definition of what we call selfish today, when we say, oh, that's a selfish thing you're doing.
Yeah.
I argue most of them, no, it's not. It's not a selfless thing they're doing, but it sure as hell ain't the best thing for them.
Yeah, sure.
They're not serving themselves with that idea, with that immediate gratification or that burn bridge or that lie, cheat, steal to get what they want. And they got it. Yeah, you got the trophy. Okay, but man, that's like transient. That's not selfish. That was like kind of foolish. You kind of put yourself in a corner, bro. Tomorrow, you didn't buy yourself any equity for freedom in your own future. So that's not truly selfish.
Right.
There's another word for it, but it ain't selfish, if you ask me. I mean, so redefining what we call success. Redefining mm-hmm. how what? It's a success seems to be this lame thing that we're thought to chase, and you brought it up earlier, from this stimulus that we're being fed in the world and every ad and what the world tells us, how you succeed, how you become happy. It's a one-lane highway going vertical, directly vertical. And that highway is packed, and horns are honking, and people are – everyone wants on that highway. Quantity. More quantity, highest number wins, highest building wins. And a lot of that can become at the sacrifice of quality. And so what is success? If it's all quantity, it's the lack of bringing more quality and qualification to our life, our personal life, selfishly, if it's not bringing that, if the quantity is not bringing that quality, then we're on the wrong highway. We're using the wrong calculator for what we're deeming to be successful and how we're defining how we're truly being selfish to ourselves or not with ourselves.
Yeah. It's like there's a lot of people that have won a lot of championships, a lot of people that have made a lot of money, started big companies, won a lot of awards, had what seems like a glamorous, wonderful life. But how many of those people are happy? How many of those people did it do for them what they thought it would do for them? And then there is, you could argue, a rarer feat, which is the person who is great at what they do and has enough, or and feels good about themselves, or and is a good person, mm-hmm. right? That's
the honey hole. That's the spot right there. That's the man. That's the woman. That's the person right there.
Yeah. And which one of those are you aiming at? Or are you unthinkingly going, Steve Jobs, greatest, most famous CEO of all time, that's who I'm modeling my life after. And you're not asking, well, what was it like to be Steve Jobs? Would I be happy living in that guy's brain, body, house? You can't just think, oh, I'm sure it's a nice, fancy house. You have to go, is this what I want? Is this what I'm meant for? Is it even possible to be a happy or good person at that level, living that way, having made those choices? No judgment on him specifically. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And then along the way, if that's your aspiration, and again, I've been accused of this, and I want to throw this out there for any ears on it. And Ryan just said it. I'm not saying it, and I don't hear him saying it at all. Chasing the quantity. Nothing wrong with chasing the quantity. Go for it. Mm-hmm. Get it. amen. But if your aspiration is to be like that mogul or to be – I know. I got friends. You know what the ambition is? I want to be the richest man in the world. I want to be the richest person in the world. I'm like, wow. That's okay. That's a badass ambition. Now, along the way, and they've told me, no. I don't care about highest number. I want to be on the top Forbes, the richest person in the world. I'm like, oh, wow. All right. And they don't, and they're not qualifying. They're not bringing in along the way measurements of like necessarily an ethics measurement. That's the race they're racing, bro.
Yeah.
I know some people like that. Now, if you ring up the Steve Jobs or whoever it's going to be, and you say, yeah, what's their house like? Well, you got to, and how do I want to be like them? Great for the aspiration, but whoever that is chasing that, make sure that you're asking, what's my house look like? How am I different than Steve Jobs? Where do he and I differ a little bit? If I'm trying to mimic him, we know that never happens, right? I mean, you can't mimic anybody, even if you write the exact same words, make the exact same moves. It's a different time. It's a different meeting. It's a different choice.
Sure.
But I know I've got some friends that do that too, that are going after to be just like someone or try to imitate. And they are completely blind along the way to who they are, to what they feel, to what matters to them. They're so objectively, I guess, chasing something that they want to be that they never really subjectively go, oh, wait a minute. Who am I? What am I doing? What do I like? What do I give a shit about?
Yeah.
And I think what we're saying is that the two don't have to contradict each other. And that goes back to the selfish can be the selfless. The two are not contradictory. You can chase an aspiration. Write that billboard. Play it first, that headline out there that you're chasing, that you want, that eulogy or whatever it is that's being read, that legacy that you will leave, the shadow across this earth, this globe, when you go. Chase that. Great. But along the way,
sure.
How's the path personal? How are you, I don't know, what words have you used, more healthy? Did you care? Not at the expense. Did you get that? Can you get there? Not at the expense of harming people you loved or not being around as a husband, a father, for a lover or friends or whatever those things are. If you love food, but then all of a sudden you at the expense, you quit enjoying a meal on the way mm-hmm. to get there. You can do both.
Yeah. Cause what if you get in a plane crash, halfway there? Did you like that ride? You know, or was the sacrifice and the struggle and the compromises and everything you made along the way, was it only worthwhile if you get the outcome, right?
Right.
Which you don't control, right? You don't control who gives the Academy Award at the end of the award season. You don't control where, you saw this with your book, you don't control, the New York Times decides who the number one book is, not what the objective sales are, just like you don't control. Forbes decides who the richest person in the world is. The audience decides who the best musician of all time is. Mm. You know, the market decides who the best baseball player in the world is. All that stuff is outside your control. So I'm not saying you never delay or defer gratification. You never sacrifice so you can get something. But I'm trying to get to a place in my work where actually doing the work is itself enjoyable and rewarding. And then the sales and the reception is a bonus on top.
Right. Yeah. It's a great place to get if you can get there. I've been there.
It's hard, though.
It's hard. I've been there a few times. And I still got some of the DNA in me, but I'm working on it too, man. I'm trying, if it's still trying to have your cake and eat it too, I'm still like, well,
yeah.
Hang on a second. The result does matter to me here. I'm like,
Well, if you don't care about the results at all, nobody will pay for you to do it anymore, right? So we live in a world where you got partners that care.
To be present. Yeah. Yeah. Let's admit this, though. I can even say that as for me, but how, at least, this is true. I think the amount of times that the result a beginning of what it is that you wanted, the actual capture proof being what you thought it was going to be or giving you what you thought it would give you, it doesn't happen that often. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
Sure.
Because I've had a couple experiences in my life where actually when I got to the top of that mountain or through that proverbial door and got that prize that I was after, I had whoever gave it to me recite to me exactly what I had written down and planned.
Yeah.
Said, and when I get there, this is what can be said. This is what I'll get. And I was like, did you get my mail? And they didn't get my mail. I'm like, that's exactly what I was trying to. So I've had it happen a couple times and call it, I don't know what you call it, but the other 99.9% of the times I know for me and what I get from others is that let me say this for fact. I think it is fact that you land there, you never go ta-da.
Yes.
You land there, you never go, I did it. That never happens. And I think a lot of us think that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that I've never heard of actually happening.
Yes.
And I don't believe does. You immediately go, I've just handed the baton off to my higher self and I can't even see the ceiling. I'm just getting started here.
I remember the first time I hit the New York Times bestseller list. I was mowing my lawn when my agent called and he goes, "You hit it." And I was like, "Cool. Now I got to finish mowing my lawn." You know, like the ticker tape doesn't come pouring out from the ceiling. Nobody throws you a parade. The thing you needed from your dad that you didn't get, the pain that you felt from your childhood, it doesn't, the hole is not magically filled. Yeah. And I've got to imagine you're hoisting the Oscar over your head. It isn't ta-da, and it doesn't magically do everything that you dreamed or hoped it would do for you. It's nice.
Well, or did I have, oh yeah, it was nice. It was a wonderful accomplishment. I love achievement and accomplishment. And I got with my peers telling me, "Hey, you did excellent." That gave me a certain sense of validation and all kinds of wonderful things. But I don't think I didn't have goofy expectations of what it would do if. I never had an objective. You know why? Because I felt like that would be like, you know, kissing Peter to steal from Paul. I felt like that would be kind of a coup de grace. If you dare have the arrogance to get objective and think, what would my life be like if I won the Oscar before you even got that, son of a bitch? Who the hell think you are? You ain't getting it. You know what I mean? So again, whoop, I mowed the lawn. I just mowed the lawn, and all of a sudden I got done, and I got Lawn of the Year, and they handed me a trophy, and I won an Oscar, and I was like, oh, wow, cool.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
But I never stopped out to go, what if I get Lawn of the Year, if I win this Oscar, what if? You know, I never had the arrogance or confidence to be that objective of if, when. Because I felt it would draw me from ever getting it.
As a cherry on top, that's, you want it to be the cherry on top, not the whole reason you're doing it, because it won't do it for you. It won't. And I think the other thing that happens, right, you win the award, you do the thing, you pull it off. There's that voice inside you that can go, this isn't what I thought it would be. It's probably because I need to do it again first, right? Like, I got to prove it's not a freak. I got to do it again.
Yeah. If I just do it twice, there can be no argument.
Yeah.
It was not folly or fad. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what keeps
us
going.
You know,
the human species
three
going.
Times, though, I'm telling you, I'm on my way to unanimous now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I just had, has anyone ever gotten four? Four. Now, four of them?
The most. Yeah. What's the most? I need one more than the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
what a great race.
Back to the music.
Liu Kang. My shoot game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang. My shoot game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang. My shoot game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang. My shoot game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang. I got kicks like Liu Kang. From Gucci to J. I got shoes for days. Nikes and Adidas. I could build a Foot Locker, Louis V the Prada.
Uh-huh.
Who you know with kicks hot? I walk into Nike town. Tell the bitches wipe me down. I miss the foot action. I got kicks off the wall, off in eyeball. Like give me this, give me that. With a fitted hat to match. Uh-huh. Snapbacks and retro. Some J's I can't let go. You see my fresh pop tag? Leave them all with heavy bags. Major cool, though she be like, what kind of kicks are those? Custom made, of course it is. You couldn't walk a mile in my forces, bitch. My shoot game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang. My shoot game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang. My shoot game is insane. I got
kicks like Liu Kang. My shoot gang, spin bang. I got kicks like Liu Kang. My closet look like finish line. Yeah. I leave a trail of dead rappers when I finish rhyme. I'm fly with an air rat. Check that Air Max. I put cash in my shoe box. Adidas got them blue boxes. I got too many shoe options. See them Gucci G's? Yeah, yeah, I got them. Louis V, red bottom. My style loud like the sound of bomb mix. I should make my own shoes. I'm the white Kanye. Yeah, I got an awesome plan. Still got plain money. I can cop them new Jordans, fam. I don't buy a pair. I buy 100, man. Walking in the club. My shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Luke Kane. My shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Luke Kane. My shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Luke Kane. My shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Luke Kane. My shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang, my shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang, my shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang, my shoe game is insane. I got kicks like Liu Kang.
How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga, as they have been for it. Be a lie if I told you that I never thought of that. My niggas, we the last ones left. But life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga, as they have been for it. Be a lie if I told you that I never thought of that. My niggas, we the last ones left. Life goes on. As I bail through the empty halls, breath stinking in my drawers. Ring, 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 squad, y'all. Nobody cries. Life is a baller. Alcohol and booty calls. We used to do them as adolescents. Do you recall? Raise the G, loped out and blaze the weed. Get on the roof, let's get smoked out and blaze with me. 2 in the morning and we still high, assed out. Screaming thugs till I die before I pass out. But now that you're gone, I'm in the zone. Thinking I don't wanna die all alone. But now you're gone and all I got left is stinking memories. I love them niggas. I'm drinking Hennessy while trying to make it last. I drank a fist for that ass when you pass. Cause life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga. There's a heaven for a G. Be a lie if I told you that I never thought of death. My nigga, we the last ones left. But life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga. There's a heaven for a G. Be a lie if I told you that I never thought of death. My nigga, be the last ones left. And life goes on. Yeah, nigga, I got the word as hell. You blue trowel and the dud gave you 25 with an L. Time to prepare to do fair time, won't be parole. Imagine life as a convict that's getting old. Plus with the drama, we're looking out for your baby's mama. Taking risks while keeping cheap checks from getting on her. Life in the hood is all good for nobody. Remember gaming on dumb hotties at your party. Me and you know true or two. While scheming on hits and getting tricks that maybe we can slide in truth. But now you blurry, rest niggas cause I ain't worried. Eyes blurry, saying goodbye at the cemetery. Though memories fade, I got your name tatted on my arm. So we both born to my dying days. Before I say goodbye, Caden with mental rest in peace. Thug till I die. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga. There's a heaven for a G. I'd be alive if I told you that I never thought of death. My nigga, we the last ones left. And life goes on. How many brothers fell victim to the streets? Rest in peace, young nigga. There's a heaven for a G. I'd be alive if I told you that I never thought of death. My nigga, we the last ones left. Cause life goes on. Bury me smiling. My pocket, have a party at my funeral. Let every rapper rock it. Let the hoes that I used to know from way before kiss me from my head to my toe. Give me a paper, a pen, so I can write about my life of sin. A couple of bottles of gin in case I don't get in. Tell all my people I'm a rider. Nobody cries when we die. We outlaws, let me ride until I get free. I live my life in the fast lane. Got police chasing me. To my niggas from old blocks, from old roofs. Niggas that guided me through back in the old school.
soon, homie. Father, they passed away. Niggas doing life. Niggas doing 50 and 60 years and shit. I feel you, nigga. Trust me, I feel you. You know what I mean? Last year, we poured out liquor for you. This year, nigga, life goes on. You finna clock mail, get money, evade bitches, evade tricks, get flags, plenty space. Basically, just represent for you, baby. Next time you see your niggas, we gon' be on top, nigga. You gon' be like, God damn. That's right, baby. Life goes on. And we up out this bitch. Hey, Kato, mentally, y'all niggas make sure it's popping when we get up there, man. Don't front.
Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe. Ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe. Rest in peace, Kobe. Ballin' like I'm Kobe. They been actin' like they all know me. All my haters are trying to slow me, but I'm toppin' like I'm Obi, swishin' like an Obi. There ain't nothing y'all can show me. If this is my last game, I'm dropping 60. I'm a OG. Dropping 81, ripping Raptors in 06. I'm a part owner, but swear, I've been a fan since. There's certain people that just can't diss. I stay hot, steady, swishing. I can't miss. Ballin' like I'm Kobe, I dropped 30 for a ring. I'm locked in it, Mamba from within. People taking shots at me, only hit the rim. When I'm shooting for the win, guaranteed it's going in. Ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe. Ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe, ballin' like I'm Kobe. Rest in peace, Kobe. Blew a stack, left the club with a baddie. She said, if you wanna see me, just send the addy. Shit, we just met, but she already called me daddy. She tryna fuck me in the back of my Bugatti. She don't wanna leave me. Yeah, she know I got the juice. I got too many options, but I still don't wanna choose. Time passed, and I still don't wanna lose. It's hypnotic, man. This flow will get you loose. I've been ballin', I'm in the bag, and the feeling. Money callin' quit. Now, let me do the talking, yeah. I'm going hard till I'm in a coffin. I'm ballin', man, like me. Don't wanna come around often. Ballin' like I'm Kobe, 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 ballin' like I'm Kobe. Rest in peace, Kobe.
Oh, Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about?
I'm running the game, you running your ghost. We not the same, I'm equal to none.
Never.
Homie, you a gong shaker and I'm a rib breaker. I leave you on a real stretcher like a rubber band. I will stretch it, top notch flow and shit regular. John Jones of this rap shit with no competitors. A lifetime ahead of you, I hustle, damn it. I keep gong shaking, eat a knuckle sandwich. I've got patties for beef, I turn into man witch. Tell me how it feels to be a man bitch. Decapitate competition, they all brainless. I'm Willie like Willie beaming on any given Sunday. Yeah.
Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about?
Where I'm from, we play it raw. We cutthroat and buy our business. Some call it New Orleans, but I nicknamed it Chopper City. It's the home of the Hornets and the home of the Saints. But don't get that name twisted with a tall shelf in the lake. If you want work, we'll tell you we got weight. Takes you 22 for a burger, flour, cake. Nigga, ride, fly. In business on 22, double back, drop 26s under the 8-2. I'm a fool with it, hoes be like I want him. Fresh sticky shirt over my tee with some bows and Tims. I'm a hot boy, if you ain't no, ask somebody. On Valentine Magnolia, I'm like the Don John Gotti. Don't try me or you end up a nobody. On the front of a tee with your people second line. And it's like that, I ain't the one to size up. Cause if you do me that, then I'ma have to fight up.
Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about?
Hearing is up town, is y'all familiar with this sound? 100 rounds to gun you down. Put your bitch ass under the ground without no funeral. See, I'm a general. Is it heaven or hell? Send me where the killers go. My pill bust is slow. Finger roll up the drones. I'm about to tell them what they need to know. Don't fuck with us, we creeping low. He out there 13, he out there 17. I'm out there motherfucking 3, now who won't be? I be damned, it's gon' kill us, stay humble. I could get you killed without up in the bundle. Magnolia, that's my project. Never call it a jungle. A spot on the block and the key of dope to fumble. I'm down south hustling, get paid in many ways. It's illegal, 100 G's, I'm coming to bust your head. I say fuck the feds, and I say it again. Fuck from the street to the pen, I play the game to win.
Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about? Nigga, what you talking about?
Bitch.
What you talking about?
Is this for the ones in the broken homes? We had to get it in on our own. Now we rolling stone. Now we rolling stone. This is for the ones in the broken homes. We had to get it in on our own. Now we rolling stone. Now we rolling stone.
Mama left me when I was just 2 years old. The product of a broken home. That's how the story goes. My pops held it down when times were dark. You're looking down from the heaven, but I got him in my heart. This is for the misfits and have It didn't take a rocket science to figure out this life shit.
And then I'll catch you guys tomorrow. Peace.